Dit is Het Een Sluit Het Ander Niet Uit.
De podcast over moderne liefde en onafhankelijke keuzes.
Wij zijn Vera en Leroy. We ondernemen, creëren en leven samen. En we krijgen nogal wat vragen, gags en opmerkingen over wie we zijn en wat we doen.
Ja, wij geloven niet zo in rigide hokjes denken. En willen juist meer ruimte maken voor fluiditeit, verandering, openheid en vooral fun.
In deze podcast filosoferen wij over samenwerken en samenliefde, seks, non-monogamie, ambitie, creativiteit, anxiety en algehele moeite en struggelina's met de wereld om ons heen.
Geniet, heb lol en mocht je deze aflevering tof vinden, help mee door het te delen en tag ons erin.
Ja, en vertel het ook door aan mensen die een entertaining podcast over moderne liefde ook kunnen waarderen.
Enjoy!
Yes, so we have the applause going on.
Love it.
Yes.
Yes.
Welcome back.
Yeah, we always have the applause, right?
I love your studio audience. It's really nice.
They're so enthusiastic.
Yes. Yeah.
Always there for us.
So today we start in English. Our podcast usually is in Dutch, but today we're in English because we have a great guest here. It's Rob, all the way from New York
now, right?
Today.
Currently New York, usually LA, but you know, back and forth.
You know, back and forth.
Sometimes bi-coastal, Netherlands.
Bicoastal bisexual, I read somewhere in your book.
Yes, exactly.
Love that. The bi jokes are there. Yes.
It's culture. It's a very important part of what makes us bi, I guess.
Yeah, like, stupid
yes,
jokes.
We have to do the puns, yes.
Yeah. Let me just introduce you for a little bit. Robert Brooks Cohen, this beautiful three names, is a screenwriter, podcast host, and now author. He wrote for shows like Law & Order, hosted podcast Two Bi Guys, and his book Bisexual Married Man was released just last November, I believe. And in 2021, we celebrated Pride together in Amsterdam on the Bi Plus boat. You actually helped building it even. Yeah.
There's great pictures.
There's great pictures, yes. It was great fun. And today, you're here to talk about your new book, but also just to talk about the whole bisexual journey, being a bisexual man. Leroy knows all about it.
I do, yes. Yes.
It's
fun.
It's
People should try it sometimes.
Yes.
Definitely. Everyone should try it.
Everyone should try it.
Yeah. I mean, hey, and I know you always start your podcast with the question, how do you identify? So I thought, how do you identify?
Sure. Well, hello. Thank you so much for having me. It's lovely to see you two again. I identify as a bisexual, queer, white, cis, Jewish man, and as a writer, I guess, also as part of my identity. But yeah, I obviously I'm bisexual. I host Two Bi Guys, but I am liking the queer label more and the queer culture and being part of that broader thing. And also, before we keep going, I just want to say, I loved that week in Amsterdam 2 years ago when I met you guys in person and you, I mean, I had been wanting to visit Amsterdam, but you guys are the reason I was there for that and there for the boat. And the boat was such a special, really special day. And I met so many fun and awesome bi people who I still keep in touch with. And I often think about what is like spiritual queer events for me that really were meaningful, and that weekend in Amsterdam always comes to mind. It was just joyous and amazing and a perfect weekend,
and it's so impactful to be on a boat like that, right? Like through the canals and seeing everyone. Yeah
because I can imagine it. There was lots of water, lots of boats there. And I know that in the US they call Pride cars fleets sometimes, like they don't float, they don't
we actually call them floats.
You call them floats,
but they're driving down the street on wheels, which is weird.
So now you had the real thing, but you did Pride before, and like you absolutely found community before in New York, obviously. You're part of the
By request.
By request.
Yeah. Well, and I marched in Pride in New York and in LA, and one of my favorite things is seeing, as you're marching, the other bi people or other people mm-hmm. with bi flags or pan flags, like, get excited yeah. when yeah. your group goes by. And that happened so much on that boat. Like, it yes. felt like it was happening every time we turned a corner. There were so many people excited to see the bi boat. And I was holding a sign for part of it that said, hi, bye.
Hi, bye. I remember
so
that.
Many people waved to me. It was so nice.
So true.
Yeah. We did, that was the first year we did the design for the bye boat. Yeah. And it was all Studio 54 and Glittery Glamoury. And yeah, I have a picture of you with the hi, bye sign in your hand. That's very much iconic.
Yeah.
So when Robert says that he's hosting Dubai Guys, he actually means a podcast. Dubai Guys might host more than Dubai Guys on some days when they're feeling lucky. But this is basically how we got to know each other. Well, I got to know you because looking around for community and stories and hey, what words can I give to the feelings I have and what, like, how should I experience what yeah. I'm experiencing now? I found your podcast and recognize a lot of myself in your story, which really helped shape how I felt and how I relate to my identity and to give that a place. And that, yeah. the podcast, Cass, is you're almost running 5 years now?
Yeah, we started at the end of 2019, so we're almost at 5 years. Yeah, yeah, I can't believe that.
Since September 19, nice. Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, yeah. So you talk about resonating with Rob's story. Can you tell us a little bit about your bisexual journey or your bisexual awakening? I don't know what you want to call it.
Yeah.
Can you tell us a little bit about it? Yeah.
Yeah, sure. And I love that it was helpful for you because I think of you guys as like bicons also when I got there. By the time I met you, whatever, 2 years later, you're like, I learned from you and I'm inspired yeah. by you too. Nice. So I like that it works both ways. Mm-hmm. I came out as bi in my early 30s. And for a long time before that, I really just like, it was so deeply buried that I didn't really even, I wasn't fully aware of it. Like, I knew that I liked women and I dated women and that felt fine. And even though there was like some discomfort around that in hindsight, because I wasn't like being my full authentic self, I still like felt good about that and natural. I didn't feel like I was lying. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's part of why for many years, I just ignored these other thoughts. And I thought, I'm straight and that's fine. And everybody must have these thoughts sometimes, mm-hmm. right? Like, mm-hmm. I just thought that's it's normal and that'll go away or something.
Yeah.
But I guess it was more like my mid to late 20s where the thoughts weren't going away like I thought they might. Mm-hmm. And they started bubbling up in different places and I would realize, you know, I thought certain people were hot or I had crushes on people and didn't know what to make of that. Like, why is that happening? And I was
Did you try to like repress that or were you kind of curious about it?
I think I was both. I mean, it was both. Like, I was curious about it because I, looking back in my late 20s, would watch gay porn mm-hmm. and I would like mix that in with straight porn and be interested in stuff like that. So I was definitely curious in my mind and exploring it in ways that felt very safe and private, but I would only do that in private. I would not tell anyone about it. And even when I did watch gay porn, like I would tell myself it wasn't important either. Like I would just say, I told myself a lot of things about what that was.
Yeah.
So I definitely still repressed it and was scared of it, of what it would mean. I think the biggest thing was like, I knew I was attracted to women and I was afraid I was gay or people would perceive me as gay, and therefore if I ever came out as bi, it would actually be cutting off the part of myself that I was so familiar with, mm-hmm. which was the attraction to women. Like,
yeah.
I didn't want to cut that off forever just to explore this other stuff. So
yeah, this is what I really recognize.
Thing, right?
Yeah. And which is, you know, like when you're saying it, I get triggered to ask questions like, well, so you know that you're attracted to women, but then you thought you were gay. Like, how does that work? But I right. actually had the exact same thing. Like, how can I, like, it's not even that, like, you feel like gay, I guess. Like, well, I feel very gay most of the time. But, you know, like, it's not even like, oh, but because that must mean that I don't feel attracted to women. It's more
right.
that you feel like you're gonna be perceived as gay.
You cannot go back.
And then I can't, you know, yeah. like I can't have a girlfriend anymore, or like fall in love anymore, or something like that. So
right. Yeah. Well, and also now looking back, like I've met so many people and I've talked to so many people who have normalized fluidity for me. So mm-hmm. now I think, oh, of course, that's possible. Why can't you like two things? I can like chocolate ice cream and vanilla ice cream. And yeah. sometimes I'll mix them together and it's even better. But like, but we grew up in a world that was so binary. I think it's mm-hmm. easy to forget the conditioning that we were under, because mm-hmm. I really just thought at the time, especially in high school and college, there was no bi visibility. And I just thought, if you're not straight, you're gay. And so yeah. if I like guys, I must be gay. It just didn't compute to me that this was possible.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So when did things start to change for you then?
When I was 29, I decided I don't want to turn 30 without exploring this in real life.
Oh, nice.
So I was like, had been watching porn and realizing this is not going away.
You had
and
a deadline?
So, I remember thinking, like, I'm going to be 30 and like, I know I'm into this. So like, why not see? Like, what's the worst? The worst that happens is I do it and I don't like it, or I guess in my mind, the worst that happens is I do it and I turn gay. Yeah. I guess that was
you
my
were single
fear.
At the time.
Yes.
I was single at the time.
Of self-exploration time of yours.
I mean, I was dating a lot of women in my late 20s, but they often didn't last that long. Like I would date women for 3 months, or I think the longest relationship I had around that time was like 6 months. Mm-hmm. That was a serious relationship. And like, looking back, I think I couldn't get fully invested in those relationships because subconsciously I knew I had more to explore about myself mm-hmm. and I wasn't fully being myself, but mm-hmm. I didn't know why at the time. Go ahead. I forget what I was going to say.
Yeah, no. So there was this point you were like, okay, I'm turning 30. I have to, I want to go explore. But then to get to a bi identity, I think that took a little longer.
Yeah, I was curious about the part before that. Like, what? How did you explore? What was that for? Because I remember reading in your book. I want the juicy details, Rob. I read in your book. There's so many fun different perspectives and sections in the book, like queerness and possibilities, the invisibility of passing, internalized homophobia and bisexual parenting, but also bi and porn as a key to unlock it. And I remember telling people in your podcast that for you that was a place where you would like take your homophobia and find porn that would like match that feeling, but also give you that nice bisexual sauce. So like secret kind of like gay-ish porn or something like that.
I was very interested at the time in two specific kinds of gay porn, which was gay for pay and like hazing, fraternity kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Because to me, those were straight guys doing the porn. Yeah. And in my
head, don't want to do this.
Right. Yeah. Oh, they're only doing it for the money, or they're doing it because they have to get into the fake stupid fraternity that doesn't really exist.
You're gay if you don't want to put my cock in your mouth, like stuff like that.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think that turned me on the most, more than just like watching regular gay porn didn't really turn me on, but that did, because it was like a fantasy fulfillment of like, oh, if I were them, I could explore sex with Ben and still maintain the straight identity.
Without labeling yourself as gay or bi or anything else like
that. Yeah, so it was like a world where this was possible, where I could explore this without changing my identity.
Also without actually having bi sex. I remember that for me, I throughout my life, every time that I had sex with a boy or a guy or something, then I put it away in like some kind of corner in my mind that it didn't really exist, because then I didn't have to think about it, and
then it wasn't true.
Then I was still, you know, like what I was already doing, and it was a very dark place that I kept all those, so I couldn't really see it, and that was easier. So how did that start?
How did it change? Because you talked about the bi request also. You also went out and be like, okay, I have to find community in a way or something.
Right. So I'll go from one to the other. I had a similar experience to you, Leroy, where like when I first started exploring this, I was on Grindr, I think was the app I got on, and I identified on the app as straight but curious or something like that. Mm-hmm. And what I found was there were a lot of people on the app interested in that who would sort of offer me things that felt very safe and felt like I could, we could talk about what happened beforehand. I would only cross boundaries I wanted to cross and not others. So, for example, my first few experiences were like what's called a no recip blowjob, which means I would go to someone's place, get a blowjob, leave. I wasn't doing anything to them. There was no making out or really romance of any kind. It was just a blowjob. And like, I enjoyed that. And it felt like I'm getting this, you know, experience that I want, and I'm maintaining my identity. I'm not crossing the line. I'm not like kissing him. So it's not, it's not that gay. and that was like sort of where it started. And it just like, I escalated step by step, very slowly.
Slippery slope.
So the first time you walked out, you deleted Grindr, and you were like, this, you know, like, didn't really have, but then it escalated.
Yeah. Yeah. As you wanted to. Once you do something that's fun and like nothing bad happens, I'm like, well, why not do something else and do a little more? I still at the time was thinking like it's so different to be with men and women. And then I forget the first time I actually kissed a guy, but it was a little bit later. Mm-hmm. I was like, well, first of all, with the blowjob, I was like, oh, this feels good. And it feels like the same as getting a blowjob from a woman. Like, why, you know, there's people don't realize it's the same thing.
Yeah.
And then, but then I still thought, oh, but kissing a guy is different. That's gay. Mm. And then when I finally did that, I was like, oh, that's also the same.
Yes.
Like, this is just kissing a person and making out with someone. And it's not like I know how to do that too. And it feels very, very similar.
Yes. Yes.
So why would you have wanted in the first place? Like, if
right. If you do these things with a blindfold on, you probably might have a hard time making out the gender of the other person. It's like, what? Then I was like, why?
Yeah.
Who cares?
Yeah.
And then I think, Vera, to answer your question, that realization over probably about a year. It was like a year of step by step. Okay, I'll do this. Okay, I'll try that. Until I was finally like a normal queer person, not having as many boundaries. And then, and every time I was like, oh, it's the same. Why was I so scared of this? Why does everyone make a big deal out of this? Why is bisexuality not the most popular thing in the world? And then I was like confused. I was like, am I the only one who understands this? Am I crazy? And that's when I decided I want to read about this and I want to meet people and I want to go to Bi Request. And I had found it online before. It took me a while to actually walk in the door. But when I went there once, and that was like the big change for me in terms of identity, because I met real people who agreed with this worldview I was coming to in private. Mm-hmm. And they normalized it so much, and they talked about it like it was totally valid and normal. And that day changed everything, and I kept going back, and very quickly I accepted I was bi. I called myself bi. I think within like 3 months of going to the first meeting was when I started coming out to friends and family.
Mm. Yeah, nice. That really helps, right? Having community and people around you that normalize things, that you're not the only one dealing. Yeah.
Did you all do this in your own head?
Yeah.
Did you do this in your own head? Like,
thinking you're the only one?
You feel something, and then you do like a hookup or a date, and then you feel something else, and then you think about it, and there's words like bisexuality. When did that pop up? Was this all an internal process, or did you have like someone
Well, interestingly, I think a lot of it was internal, and I went down a lot of internet rabbit holes, and thankfully there was some stuff on the internet that made sense. But then I just kept thinking, is this crazy? Like, is anyone else reading this? How do I know this is real? But I didn't talk to any friends or anything through this. But interestingly, I was talking to the guys I was hooking up with. Mm. So like the first few times there were very few words exchanged because I was super nervous. but as you know, over that first year where I was hooking up, but not telling anyone, I was telling the guys I was hooking up with, right? Like we were talking, they were asking me, what have you done? They were asking me, why, you know, how do you identify? Why do you identify as straight? Like, and I would start to come out to them, you know, by a little bit into that period, I was telling those guys, well, like I'm mostly straight, but I'm not fully straight, or, you know, I'm a little bi, or I'm curious, or I'm on the spectrum. I think it's a spectrum, or like, I'm going to marry a woman, but I like sex with men. So over that year, I was actually talking to a lot of people about it. They were just people I had never met before and have not seen since. I mean, actually a few of them I became friends with, but so I actually was processing it with them and trying out the bi label with these guys I was hooking up with randomly.
Yeah. So this very, like, you just basically named it like what I heard before. I think the first time I heard someone say exactly that, I was 18 and living in New York, where you're now, actually.
Ooh.
Oh. There was a guy who was bi. I would say, look, I knew nobody was bi, but he identified as bi. But also he said, like, I'm going to marry a woman, but I also like having sex with men. And I hear you say this as well, and you actually wrote a book, Bisexual Married Men. Like, why is that? So first of all, why was that thought so important, that I'll still have it all, I can still have it all, or something like that? And then the other part is like, why did you take that concept and
because the book focuses on that, by married men to women, right?
Right, right. The book is all about bi men who are married to women.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I did choose that specifically, not because it's more important, but for a specific reason.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I even now, sometimes I'll hook up with people who talk like that, who are sort of, you know, baby buys or early in their trajectory.
Oh, and baby buys.
That's how I'm gonna call them. I always call them faceless. Or well, they are faceless most of the time.
Yeah, usually. Mine, yeah.
Yes, that's true.
But you know,
baby
and it's like I have a lot of compassion for that. To some extent, I want to be like, let go of that. Come, mm-hmm. come over here. But also I'm like, I get it, because I was locked into it too. And I think the reason it was so important to me was because, like, I always grew up and had this vision of what my life would be and expectations from family, from culture, from all my friends around me. Like, I went to my high school reunion recently and, like, almost everyone is married in a straight marriage.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, with kids and everything. And, you know, I do want kids someday. And, like, there's some of that vision that still I'm clinging to, or at least have expectations. But I was really locked into it. I was really just like, didn't see it any other way. And I wanted to make sure that this queer thing in me didn't get in the way of that. Mm. So, like, I don't know exactly why more than that, but it has been a process of sort of breaking that down and getting comfortable with maybe not ending up exactly where I thought I would be in that respect someday, and being sort of excited about the queer possibilities mm-hmm. rather than locked into this one way it has to be.
Yeah, it's a lot of unlearning of expectations of things that are normal, or ways of thinking even.
And there's different levels too, I guess. Like, it's not like, oh, you're bi now, so you must be enlightened or something like that. Like, I remember that one, so there's way more community and podcasts and stuff now than a few years ago, obviously, mm-hmm. in any queer field, I guess. But I remember finding a very specific niche on Reddit, which was from bisexual people in an opposite sex monogamous relationship. And there were like 30 people there who really got along with each other, and I was one of them. Like, with different views on like how to include your kid in your bisexuality, or like how, like, or okay, I'm monogamous, but, you know, I'm on my bicycle. I'm a bicycle. Like, oh, now I'm more into women. Now I'm more into men. Now I'm doing, you know, like, now I'm a power bottom. I don't know, like, all that. And then, so it can be hard sometimes. And then people talk to each other or stuff like that, or talking about things like infidelity, or like trying to open up your relationship, or how to have these conversations around that. Like, so it's a very specific niche that I wanted to like learn from and be in. Like, you just said, like, I chose this for a reason. Mm-hmm. One of the numbers that I saw is like 88% of partnered bi men are with somebody of a different gender. Yeah. Is that the specific reason? Like, because it's such
pretty
a big
much.
Group?
Mm. Yeah, it's the reason I chose that is because I think it's such a big group. And at the same time, it's incredibly hidden. And there's so few resources. Like, an obscure Reddit thread with 30 people is like, you know, that's great, you found it, but it's hard to find that stuff. And it's not mainstream, despite how big this group is. Like, most queer people are bi, and then most bi people, at the moment at least, end up with a partner of a different gender.
Aren't queer.
And then right, and they're straight, so they're in a straight passing relationship, and people assume that they're straight, and I think there's even more bi people out there not included in those stats of the LGBT community, because they identify as straight, but they're like what I was, what we were talking about, in my late 20s, where they're thinking about it and they're aware of it, but they're holding on to the straight identity. So I just think there's a huge, huge number of hidden, you know, bi people in straight passing relationships. So that's sort of why I chose this group. I don't think it's like more important or more valid than other bi relationships, but there's so many people and so few resources and stories and visibility for this.
And I also think, because we were in a relationship already when Leroy came out to me as bi. But I think there's You know, you hear these stories and then people maybe think, oh, but you cannot have a relationship then, or you have to break up, or you have to be open, or you do, I don't know. I think a lot of anxiety, exists around, you know, being bi in a relationship that's not queer looking, at least.
Right. Yeah, well, and many, what often comes up, I found in the stories in my book, is like, non-monogamy will come up, and some of them, some people want to do that and want to try that, and that's a whole other discussion. But majority of the people in my book, and statistically the majority of couples where someone's bi, they do remain monogamous. Like, and that's, people don't realize that. They're afraid it automatically means you have to open things up, and you don't, and most people don't. And yet still being out in that relationship is really, really important for everyone I interviewed. Yeah. Like, just
why?
Because if you're not out, you censor yourself and you're on edge a little bit about things going on in your head. You're nervous to share it with your partner. And it just, you know, to me, a primary partnership, that should be the person you share everything about yourself with. And this thing, even if you don't act on it and have sex with other people, it's still a really fundamental part of your identity. And it's like a worldview that affects how you see so many things in everyday life. And to not be able to share that with your partner is really hard. It feels doable because I've been there. A lot of people are like, oh, it's okay. I'll talk to people online. I don't have to talk to my partner. But it really does take a toll over time. And it's hard to see that sometimes when you're in it. But once people do come out, especially everyone I interviewed in my book, it's so liberating, especially if their partner is accepting of it. Like, then they can just say what's on their mind. If a hot guy walks down the street, they can talk about it. They can share that with their partner. And that's like a very freeing feeling.
The reason I ask you why is because, like, this is one of the things that to me was the biggest thing of the of everything. Like, even before, like, when I was, you know, like, whenever I was single or doing things, and I hid it somewhere away in the dark, I was like, so why bring that into light? And this is the question that I asked Vera over and over again after, because I wanted to talk to her, but like, why be out to more people? And like, I thought, like, oh, but then you can be a role model or something like that. Or like, Vera kept saying, like, no, it's because it's your identity. And because, like, once you embrace that, you'll feel it. Like, even hearing you say this now kind of like puts me back into that like frame of mind where I'm like, yeah, but that's very scary and fuck you, I'm never gonna do that. And I know that people are listening to guys are listening to this podcast and definitely to your podcast, actually named To Buy Guys, that tell me with faceless profiles that they will never be able in their relationship, like, oh, but she will never understand this, or
but then, you know, she may not, and then what? Then you can just move on. Right?
No, but I think it's so difficult to visualize the benefits for like, but she's there. You can like actually lift her up, like. But something as like kind of like complicated as, oh, it's freeing or something. It's so difficult to have like a good like a grasp on that, I guess. And I think one of the good examples is I heard you say in one of the podcast episodes once that you kind of like feel bad that you didn't embrace your own identity earlier on because you're a writer, you're a TV writer as well. And you were like, that could have used my perspective. I could have, like, within my work, even the way that a character behaves or the way that that somebody looks at somebody else or a story they tell. Can you tell me something about that? Like, how did you feel that?
Yeah, I mean, I'm forgiving myself for that, mm-hmm. and I'm glad I came out when I did. But yeah, I do wish I had just been out earlier and been myself earlier, because I was showing up in places like at work not fully myself. And I think even before I was out, I was very like an ally, LGBT ally. And so I would have perspectives on stuff at work when I worked at Law and Order about this stuff and trying to make it more fluid to some extent. But it was
this
hard.
This corpse is an ambi.
Yeah. But it was hard to be taken seriously because I wasn't out. You know, it was like, it wasn't my lived experience. At least nobody knew that. And so I was just pontificating, and I wasn't, you know, I wasn't actually making that difference. Like, you kind of have to be out for people to understand what you're talking about and believe that it's authentic. Do you feel like it was worth it for you, though? Like, how scary it was to come out to your partner? Like,
well, I
now the answer is no.
Go back in the closet.
Well, absolutely, because
cut
it
off
was
the
very
podcast.
It was very dark, and I knew periods that were like, and then it intensified, and I just couldn't, like, I was completely lost, basically. So I needed Vera, and I needed her to know that I was like, I think I'm bi, and I hadn't really, you know, like, oh, and this is how it's going to look like. This is what I want. And I told her that as well. I don't know what I want. I love you, but I feel this. So we canceled all of our work, and we talked to each other for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And the same as that you're giving, like, like we said at the beginning of the podcast, we give each other perspectives, because we can use words around things that we have done and have created. One of the things that I heard one of your guests say in a podcast, which really stuck with me, and I think people heard me say it before, it's like, every time I pass, it feels like a little self-erasure. And that was, to me, so bright. I felt so connected to that. Like, every time that people see me or see us or and assume I'm straight, it is not like that I don't like to be a straight man or something, but it's not who I am. No. So it is a little self-erasure, and that really resonated with me. That and then I could feel into that and could feel like, okay, so what do I want to bring about more? Mm-hmm. I found makeup also to you know, like, every time I pass as gay now, it's also a little celebration, but hey, what are we going to do? Like, it's going to play us together, trying to find bi community, going to gay bars, which are more queer now than back then, but that was not like, that was not our, you know, nobody understood us.
We had to create a lot of space for ourselves, I guess. But it also, it was so cool the way Leroy opened up to me about being bi or thinking he was bi, because he hadn't figured out everything. So we really could do that together. Like, what does that mean? And how do you feel then? And what do you like, or what do you want? And it also raised questions for me, and it also made a lot of sense for me. thinking like, oh, what does it say about me that I'm with this bisexual man? And it opened, also for me, it opened up so much more of understanding who I am or who I feel attracted to. And
did you identify as bi at that time?
No,
or do you
no.
now? And do you now?
Yeah, queer, I say mostly. Makes
amazing
sense. I guess. Yeah, so
it
rubs off. Yeah, it's true. But I was like, oh, now I get it. Now I understand why I never really thought heterosexual men were attractive. That makes sense. Yeah.
Okay.
There's
like queerness.
Yeah, I like queer. There's a different access to find attraction in people, and it's not mostly for me. It's not about the gender people are, but more like the way they see the world or the way they talk or do things. I don't know. It's not the the axis of man, woman, and then no. It feels in a different, it's a different shape, I guess. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, it's a whole new worldview. Okay. I have
a few
comments.
New world. Yeah.
I have a few comments on all this stuff. Okay. Number one, I applaud you guys for the way you handled that. It's so beautiful that you were open, you decided to be open, and Vera, you were so understanding and spent the time to go through it. And then that Leroy's identity affected how you thought about it. Beautiful story.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Congrats to you both. I know it's not easy. Okay. No, it's so hard. Yeah. It's so hard if you're especially that a bi guy in that relationship. Mm-hmm. It's so hard to get to the point where you're like, think it's important enough to say, because it's easy to minimize it. It's really easy to be like, this isn't a big part of my life. We have so many other things going on. But, you know, the only thing I like, and I can't say this for everyone, but for me, it seems small, but it's huge. Like, it's such a fundamental part of the way you see the world, the way you interact with people. You don't fully realize it when you're not able to talk about it. But then once I was on the other side, it just comes up so much, mm-hmm. and you realize how fundamental it is. So it actually is a big part of our identity.
Yeah. Yeah. I was talking to my neighbor the other week, like last week, and then he was like, oh yeah, because, you know, being bi in England is not like people come out to you all the time when you're open, I guess, and when you're like expressing your bi. But also, like, and I want to ask you this, there's light coming into your own past. Like, I think one of the most beautiful things about being alive is like creating the stories that you're creating and remembering things and, you know, like living. And one of the things, and this is in your book as well, and I definitely experienced it like that, is whenever I had a crush when I was younger, it felt like jealousy. Ooh, I want to look hot like he does.
Yeah.
And this comes back in your book too, right? Like, yeah. So it gives you a new perspective on your own lived experiences, right? Do you have, you started thinking back at one point, like, oh.
Yeah. I was like, wanted to look like that guy or have abs like that guy or like be good at soccer like that guy. And in hindsight, I was like, I just thought he was cute.
Yeah.
It's hard to separate the like, do I want to be that person or be with that person? Mm-hmm. And, you know, in hindsight, it's often both.
we did a podcast on jealousy and how near it is to fear also, but now jealousy is also near to having a crush or to like it morphs. Yeah.
Well, jealousy is not necessarily a bad emotion. It's a signal of something that needs to be addressed or something that needs to be talked through or just put in the open.
So it could be the fear of someone losing you, or it could be the attraction to definitely somebody of
When I also read in your book, I think you mentioned it somewhere, that like recognizing bisexuality or being attracted to more than one gender also opens up a whole new world, once again, of other things you're into. Like, I think, what was his name? Gregory, he loves to be naked. right? So did you experience things like that yourself? Did it open up more things than just bisexuality for you?
Yeah, I mean, I think like Leroy, it's opened up like how I express my masculinity and also just being less boxed in by what it means to be a man. And like, yeah, why can't I wear makeup or nail polish or wear pink or whatever and like dress however I want to dress and act however, you know, I'm a very sensitive person. And I think I shoved that down a lot too, to be like a strong man, and fuck that. And so there's like the gender stuff. And then I think there's other areas of sexuality, like kink and fetish and power dynamics and all, and also the blurring of lines of different types of relationships. Like once I broke out of the heteronormative model, it opens up other things where you're like, well, why can't I explore this thing that I'm also ashamed of? Like, why am I ashamed of that at all either? There's other people into that kink also.
It's a slippery slope.
Yeah. And I was also very locked into like, I'm the man with a woman, so I'm in the dominant role in a relationship.
Yeah.
Ooh, this is interesting. Yeah.
And I think dominant and submissive dynamics are often not looked at by straight people, but they're very important. And the man isn't always the most dominant either in the relationship or in the bedroom. And you want to find your authentic, you know, where, what feels good to you and why in that kind of dynamic.
Yes, so there's so much more to explore than because like being straight comes with such a good rule book, and there's so many things excluded from that, like, you know, anal, nipple play, poppers, all things that make life very beautiful. And
no one ever touched my nipples. No women ever touched my nipples.
No one ever touched my nipples. Like,
I didn't know that I liked it so much until a man touched it. And now I'm like, oh, that's good. Nice. Now I'll tell women to do
touch
that.
My
and
nipples.
It's great.
Yeah.
Why not? Why can't you?
We talked about this, I think, last night or the night before. Like, When did you find out that your nipples were very sensitive? You were like, well, that's not too long ago, I guess.
Yeah,
like,
I don't know. Yeah, and there's like crazy. Allowing yourself to switch in roles. And also this was very important for your journey, Vera, because like you never really liked to be put in whenever a real man comes along and tries to, you know, say like, hey little lady, you like, Vera does not like to be put in feminine kind of like because you're a lady,
the thing I hate the most in life and I struggle with the most are expectations and expectations around gender. I'm just so bored with it and tired of it, and never felt that made sense.
So wonder you didn't love dating straight men, because they're very locked into that often, and
and
a lot of queer men are sort of breaking out of that and finding what fits them the best.
Even if they don't know they're queer yet, apparently.
They found each other.
Well, also that's why I think a lot of queer people gravitate towards each other even before they realize they're queer. When I look back at friends in high school or people I had a crush on in high school or dated, like a lot of them were straight then and have come out as queer since. Yeah. And it makes a lot of sense to me that we were interested in each other or friends, or, you know, we shared a worldview, even though we didn't fully realize yet, like what it was.
We see each other.
Yeah.
We see each other.
Yeah. And can you then also say, there's a lot of men in your book telling their stories. Is there like a common thing among them? Is there one thing, or the way they came out, or the way they accept their identity or sexuality now?
I think that there's a few things. I mean, one thing is that coming out for a lot of these guys was a process. It wasn't like a one-time conversation, because you often don't realize everything right away, and like you gotta put something out there, but then there's more to talk about later. Or some of them said they told their wife before they got married, but they didn't really say it was a ongoing thing or a big deal. And then they didn't talk about it for 20 years. And then they had to come out again.
I read about this a lot. People that say like, okay, I decided that I come out every year because otherwise I'll go back into that mill. Like I tell all my friends, hey, remember, I'm with still this bi. Guy, but still I'm still a bi girl and I need to tell you this every time because I want you to remember. Yeah, mm-hmm. Okay, nice. Yeah.
And another thing is, I mean, this is probably the only universal thing in the book because like all the stories are different and that... The whole point of the book was like to tell 13 very different stories,
mm-hmm.
but then to show you what's similar. And every single one of them is glad they came out to their partner. Mm. Nice. Even the ones that it was really scary and even the ones that they ended up not being with their partner anymore. Like sometimes after they came out, whether it was because of it or because of other things, often we scapegoat bisexuality, but they were gonna break up anyway, and this just sort of shook things up.
Yeah.
None of them regret coming out. Would do it again, even if it ended the relationship. And if it didn't end the relationship, it deepened their relationship, and they're very happy that they did it. And
that's true for us as well. Personally, the most like kind of like liberating thing that had been a long time coming, but it's so attached, and maybe you recognize this too, bisexuality, is that I used to be quite rigid in my thinking because mm-hmm. you know, like if you get the question every time like, oh, you sure you're not gay? Oh, you're gay or straight? Like, you have to be sure. People ask you to be sure. So I was like, no, I'm sure. I'm just as straight as my hair. So
that's a very straight thing
and
to say.
And then I felt so confident in that. But also, like, I apply that to all these other things in my life, like my relationship. Like, I'm sure that we're going to be together forever. Or I'm sure that, like things that I couldn't claim authority over whatsoever. Right. Because I was almost afraid to not be sure. Even when I came out, I was like, so yeah, I think I'm like 73% attracted to, you know, like I needed something else to be sure about. But bisexuality doesn't work like that. It is like...
Right.
Like or life,
the diverse stories that you're telling in your book, like everybody has another perspective, and I allowed my perspective to kind of like morph and change, and that is to me like I stopped cutting off everything that was a little bit unsure to me, so that's how it mm-hmm. enriched me to kind of like do that whole.
Yeah. Because you also raised the question, is fluidity more common than rigid heterosexuality? Is it, you think?
I think so, because it just makes so much sense to me. And when we look at the numbers, like the number of fluid people who identify on the middle of the spectrum is like basically doubling with each generation. Like among young people, in some surveys, it's like, a third to half people are identifying as not straight. And like, I think that was always the case. It's just that it was not allowed and not permissible. It's becoming more accepted. And so then I think, oh, well, you know, there's a lot of older people who have repressed that, but it's there. Mm-hmm. And that's why I think they're ending up in these marriages where they're not out and they have to come out. Can I say something else about coming out to a partner?
Sure. Tell us about your partner as well. Like, do you have a partner now?
No,
well,
tell us what you wanted to tell us.
I have a partner where she's lovely, wonderful. We're married. We live in LA. We're polyamorous. We're still exploring dating with other people. I was out to her the moment I met her because I met her at Pride in 2018, marching in the bi with the bi group. So like the moment I met her, I was out to her. And actually she's transitioned. She did not identify or present as a woman when we met. And I think my bisexuality gave her a little space to explore that and not fear that I would leave her if her gender transitioned. So I think there's a lot of good support between the bi and trans communities. But what I was gonna say is like I just think there's so many guys, especially like, you know, age 30 and older, mm-hmm. who we grew up in this binary world, and we couldn't have come out as bi in our teens or 20s. Like, and so it's so hard when you've been in a relationship for a while to come out to that partner. And it's really scary. And like, I get it. But I also just think from the stories I heard and from my own experience, like, it really is such a fundamental part of you. And many of these guys fear that their partner won't accept it, or they know that their partner won't accept it. And like, it's so hard. It's so hard. I don't want to minimize how hard it is, but it's like, if you're with someone who doesn't accept who you are, that's harder. Mm-hmm. It may seem doable, and it may seem like there's many other reasons you want to do it, but that's actually so hard and unfair to you. Like, to have a partner who doesn't accept this part of you, this very natural, normal, fundamental part. And so I just, like, if you tell them and it doesn't work out between you, that could be a good thing, because it's mm-hmm. really hard to live that way. It's so hard. And all the guys in my book who were living that way came out, and now they're separated. They're glad they did it. And it's not easy to get through. And then even if you think your partner won't accept it, or even if you know what, like, I would just say you don't know. No. Look at what happened with you guys. Like, there's a reason people are attracted to each other, and you don't know who else is thinking the same things mm-hmm. and thinking they're alone also, or yeah. maybe not letting themselves fully explore it because they're scared of what it will mean. And so if you can be open and vulnerable with your partner, if their love for you is more important to them than their rigid view of like what they thought the world is and what their expectations of their relationship are, then they'll work it out with you. Mm-hmm. And if their expectations are more important than you, then that's not a fulfilling relationship.
No, it's probably mean to her. She thought she bought something, you know, straight, and now you're not
true.
If you don't do it for yourself, at least have the decency to, you know, like mm-hmm. one
true.
Yeah, but
true,
I think
true.
So for this reason, it's super important that you have written this book with all these different stories, not just one worldview or one perspective, but 13 different people with different stories and outlooks on life and coming out stories even. And so what I wanted to ask you also is, like, so we have these men, we have these stories, but how can we increase the visibility of bisexual people, bisexual men in general? Do you have ideas on that? Like, how do we... How?
Yeah. I think like that is sort of one of my missions and goals, is to do that and to share these hidden stories with the book. And like, I'm working on media, film, TV, like fiction stuff that gets it out there. So, you know, there's like, I hope that the entertainment industry can sort of see the value in these stories and see the hidden audience there that mm-hmm. will respond to it. But besides that, I really just think it's like, the more we normalize it and create space for people to be out and to be accepted as bi, and not people to then assume they're gay or they're confused or whatever, like mm-hmm. the more awareness we have, the safer it will feel to come out. And while I would not ever tell an individual person you should come out, and it's their own decision and it's their own safety and comfort, and you only want to do it when you're ready, otherwise it could not be a good experience. But I just think that's ultimately the answer, is that we have to be more visible and out there. And I, in addition to helping the community and helping other people, I just think that's a benefit to you. To be more out. Like, I know it feels scary and it may take time to get over like the hump, but I do think it benefits you to be visible, yourself.
Yeah.
In ways that are hard to notice. Yeah.
You're saying what our mission is as well, like not, with podcasts, but also with our company, with the campaigns and the boat that we did, like let's create culture and let's make everybody see that one does not exclude the other.
Because that's the name of the podcast, right? Did you like
Het Eensluit Underneath Uit?
What does that mean?
Het Eensluit Underneath Uit. One thing does not exclude the other.
Ah, yes. I love it. Well, and I also agree with you about creating bi culture. That's important because we come out as bi and then it's like, oh, well, we're like half in gay culture and half in straight culture. But like, we should create our own culture too. And that's more than just like a meme about sitting in a chair. Like, there's real stuff going on in this community that's fascinating.
And so like, do it now, because I want to
do it now.
No, I was just going to say, like, people need to listen to your podcast, but I'm sure that you want to direct people's attention to some of the people that taught you something, or like what should we look at?
Good question. I don't even know. Like, I mean, I think there's more good stuff on TV lately. There's good bi representation. I don't know. I can think of
people
things
follow,
that said it.
Like,
but
who talks about? I found some people through your podcast. Like, for example, Dr. Julia Shaw. I found her through your podcast.
Yes, she's great. She's great. Let me see. Who have I even talked to?
You have Zachary, of course.
Yeah.
Zachary Zane and Jen.
Boy slut.
Infamous boy slut.
Yes. And Jen Winston. I love Shiri Eisner. Her stuff has affected me in my politics. I don't know. There's a lot. There's a lot of good people, and I love that more like celebrities and stuff are coming out and talking about it and their bi-ness, that's been nice to see. Just like the more the better. And what I really want to see is stories on TV and in other forms that are like not reducing this to like, are you going to choose a man or a woman in the end? But actually, like, maybe you're in a relationship like this, and what are the challenges of that? And what are the fun things that only a bi couple experiences? That's what I want to see more of.
While the series is actually about something else, it's just there. That's, you know, like, let's see.
What I also find a very nice strategy. Well, we visit a lot of places. We're in places sometimes where we're kind of the odd ones out, but we have each other and are able to create space and be in a gay place but still be half naked or whatever, you know, and still feel safe because we have each other. But also there's queer groups, but there's also more gay groups that we're in sometimes, and I always find it very, very fun to be there because see people's brain like tick, 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 tick. This is a possibility too. I really, really enjoy that.
Yeah.
I know. I find straight bars to be quite boring these days.
Oh, like, I cannot. Yeah.
I'll go with friends if I want to hang out with those friends, but like the culture there does not interest me. Whereas like you go to a queer bar and it's like interesting people and like there's more people will talk to you. Yeah. And I don't know.
They're very
just
gentle.
Yeah,
gentle
and
soft.
There's very
fun bisexual agenda. Like, okay, so wrapping up the podcast with just become bisexual. Well, actually, that is maybe the last thing I want to ask you, because like I think it's a good people throw this in there, like whenever, like, oh, but everybody's a little bit bisexual. You don't say this, and there's a reason for that, like you write about it in your book as well. Why is that?
I mean, I do think that sexuality is a spectrum, and so, you know, how many people are at the very corner of the spectrum? Not as many as we think. So like I would say that, you know, everyone is somewhere and so many people identify as straight, but there could be more to it than that. But I don't say that everyone's a little bit bisexual, because I think bi is like a label that we choose. It's like, how do you know if someone's bisexual? If they say they are, mm-hmm. you know, if they're hooking up with men and women, they're not necessarily bisexual. They're bi if they say they are. And we can argue about that. There's some straight identified men who have sex with men and cling to the straight label. And like, that can be a whole other episode, but you're bi if you say you are. And that's important, because it really does matter that like you choose this and you embrace it yourself. If it's thrust upon you, it's not a positive experience. And I don't know that necessarily helps the culture. Mm-hmm. And so I just think like, it really is, your attractions are not a decision, but your identity is. You get to choose it, and you get to choose which word feels best for you and how you want to present to the world. And and it's the same with gender too. It's like,
yeah.
How do you know if someone is trans or non-binary? Like, they say they are.
Yeah.
That's the only way. We can't put things on other people. It has to come from within and authentically, because otherwise it's damaging to that person, and it's not really helpful with what we're trying to do with the culture either.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we can kind of like together celebrate our identity and you know, stand on boats and fun stuff like that. And I feel like that we should come over to your side of the pond as well. But you want to come back? You're coming back to Amsterdam. So next.
Thinking about it this summer. I may, you know, maybe like an every other summer kind of thing. I really miss it.
Biannual.
I'll see if we still have that sign. Yeah, it must be biannual. I'll see if we still have that.
No,
that
I don't
high
think
bi
so.
Sign.
No,
here.
I think everything.
We'll make you a new one.
Yeah. We'll make a new one. We should put on the other side. Bye bye. Bye bye.
Ooh, I actually started tattooing. And that's one of the things I'm going to tattoo on Leroy's.
Bye bye. All right. Well, if you have any more puns that Vera needs to tattoo on me,
I'll send them your way.
My DMs.
Yes. So people can order your book, Bisexual Married Man, on Amazon, I think, here in Holland. And of course, people absolutely should listen to your podcast, Two Bi Guys. It's a very, very good podcast. I've listened to many episodes.
Yeah.
I also find it very funny to meet you in person and then hear your voice that I always heard through my anyway.
People have this with you.
Yeah, people have this. Whatever.
Same thing.
Yes. Thank you so much. Yeah. Rob. I think thank you so much for this conversation. It was very, very nice talking to you and hearing about the bisexual men experience again.
Yes.
And to
make them visible. Find them. Those faceless. How you found all these people? It's a mystery to me. But like, find more of them. Spread the word.
Actually, I have a spreadsheet of 150 guys that volunteered, and I only could do 13. So they're out there.
Let's throw a party.
I'll invite them all. But thank you guys so much. This was such a really fun and lovely conversation. I know we've talked about it before and we have so much in common, and that's why we did connect. And thanks for what you guys are doing. The more bi visibility and podcasts we have, the better. And thank you for speaking in English for this one. I'll try to learn Dutch for next one.
Next one with you the other way around. Yeah.
I love the way it sounds. I just have no idea what you're talking about.
Yeah. Well, let's keep it that way. Everybody will speak English to you anyway. No, it's not worth it. This language is too small. Well,
thank you.
You should keep writing. Do your thing. Create culture.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. You too.
Yeah.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks so much.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.